Hi there, everybody. This is Vic Mignogna, Captain Kirk from Star Trek Continues, and you're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and to help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type BABEL into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there. In March 2018, on Continuing Mission, our special guest, Sam Cockings, began to tell us about his soon-to-be-released fan film, Temporal Anomaly. At that time, no one expected Temporal Anomaly to come under the scrutiny of CBS, but it did, causing a delay to the launch date. But Sam hasn't been resting on his laurels. In the meantime, he's been busy with his latest venture, Convergence, an exciting crossover adventure involving the crews from multiple fan productions. I'm Tony Robinson, and in this episode of Continuing Mission, we welcome back Sam Cockings to tell us how the new project came about and what we might expect to see in the future. So, without further ado, let's get into the turbo lift and meet Sam Cockings. So welcome back to Continuing Mission, Sam Cockings. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good, and I'm thrilled to talk in the morning of the UK as we're fellow English people. It's a rare thing for me.
Fellow morning people, yeah. And it's a nice sunny morning, at least for the viewers. If they look closely, they can see the sun shining through the window. So hello, viewers. Sam, the last time we spoke, you were giving a lot of information about an upcoming project of yours, which was called Temporal Anomaly. And we had decided that we would do a kind of a two-part interview. And the first part was obviously everything leading up to what Temporal Anomaly was all about. And then we were going to set a date for the second part.
After the film's release. Then, yes.
Yes. And then there's a bit of a hiatus, which we'll call it a hiatus. Can you give a brief description of kind of what happened and what might be happening and what might happen in the future?
Well, it's funny. I went from one day being known by so few people to then selling news stories about me, which was kind of an odd experience. Despite having Trek Yards, it was everyone's talking about Temporal Anomaly for a day. Yeah, the film was slated to release at the end of March. It was done, ready. Last version was being rendered, sort of thing. And I got an email from CBS. I did not take this email that basically said, please stop. I didn't take it as a end of all days. I didn't take it as an excuse to go ranting on social media. I didn't take an excuse to bash CBS. I emailed back. I opened a dialogue. I got some phone calls with them. And through the next month, which I wasn't able to report until after the fact, I worked out an agreement to allow the film's release because they were not okay to release as it was written 5 years ago, because that was the trailer that was released reflected the 2013 version, which was, as we know, long time before the guidelines and long time before I was even known in the public. When I wrote it, I was just a second year university student with luckily some better filmmaking knowledge than the average fan, to make sure I was ahead of the curve for myself. And as the thing grew, it looks and looks better. And then times change and it couldn't be released in its original form. So it had to be changed.
Right. So they weren't aware of the longevity of the project. They weren't aware that, you know, a lot of time had passed since you began and now you were coming to completion. Or did they just assume that you had started this 3 months ago and didn't care too much about how long it took or what it included?
Well, that was a, yeah, I mean, at the obviously, the grandfathering clause was a, you know, urban myth. The fact that, you know, John Lasseter said that old fan films that have been released aren't going to be affected. And some fan films that were made a while ago should be able to be released if they're mostly done, sort of thing. But that wasn't a law as much as a, if it makes sense, we'll allow that. But everything's a case by case basis anyway. And obviously they did their research after my reaching out. And they knew when I talked on the phone, it was a long-standing project. And obviously that you had to take that into account. 5 years, you know, 55-minute production using, you know what I mean? It was a very different sort of film of a bygone era, as it were. And luckily the tone of CBS was tremendous. And I was able to work with them to work out an acceptable edit, an acceptable cut, which was a compromise. And I'm very thrilled that, it was a compromise rather than a negative ordeal, as it were.
Yeah. So it all worked out well in the end. And
just a slight delay, the classic Hitchhiker's slight delay, which takes 300,000 years. If you've seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but no, it's a slight delay. It'll be released before the end of the year is my goal. I'm currently just waiting for a music composer to finish his complete new music cut of the entire piece, a 55 minutes original music. And also I'm not paying him and I've got no budget and it's free time and it's fan. So taking a little bit longer than I'd hoped, but that was one of the big changes and that's going to take a while, but it's 23 minutes through, I believe, of the 55. So it's certainly getting there. And at the moment I can't do much to change that. So I'm working on something else in the meantime. What a segue.
Right. Well, we'll come to that in a second. Okay. But the reality is that your experience with CBS, your experience with producing Temporal Anomaly is great encouragement to other fan filmmakers, because a lot of people are there sort of slightly worried, slightly scared about, once the camera starts rolling, are they going to step on some toes? Is somebody going to come down heavy on them? You know, what are they going to do? And they can look back at your experience and say, well, hang on a minute. You know, if we do this well, if we treat it, the company, you know, in the right manner, then they might not be so bothered with us.
Yeah, it.
So that's very encouraging.
Yeah, and it's hard in an audio medium to not, you know, you can't see me nodding throughout that entire statement. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I've with this new project, obviously people have mentioned CBS are going to come after you just for the pure fact of it being a new production. But if you look at the last two and a bit years since the guidelines, there have been over 24 fan films released, all of which have broken a guideline, if not more. All of them. Every single one. Most of them, at least 3 or 4. None of which have been contacted. There have been 3 crowdfunders, none of which have been contacted. And every single film released has been allowed to be released. And my project was not released and was contacted beforehand and we worked out a deal. So if you look at, you know, CBS's legacy of the last 10 years, 1 lawsuit, 2 cease and desist, and every other fan film released. So the record is still incredibly positive. And each of the cases was very specific. Your Atomicraft was asked to stop because it was very similar to Discovery and it could have been closer than it might have ended up being. You know, there's very specific reasons for each one. And like I say, I got an agreement as well. So I think CBS has been incredibly good about it. And even with Stage 9's unfortunate closing, that was again a very unique case. It's nothing to do with fan films. So people's public view that CBS is cracking down, I think has no basis when you actually analyze the specific cases. If that makes sense to you. I mean, if you would agree with the assertion there.
No, it certainly makes sense. But what it points to is it all bodes fairly well for future film productions. And that's really the point, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, I think length and budget are the biggest things for CBS and moving forward, you know.
Yeah, it is weird though that some people subliminally just seem to hit a nerve with CBS. They hit on an idea and all the suits that in Los Angeles are all jumping up and down because it's like a leaked idea that's come out but purely by the laws of whatever it is. Purely by the laws of probability, somebody's going to hit on an idea that's running very close to the storylines we're seeing perhaps in Discovery as they're coming out now. So it is interesting. Yeah. Okay. But you've moved on and you've gone in the same direction with another fan movie, which is now in production, or hopefully will be in production soon. You've done something with it. It's called Convergence. So let's talk about how that came to be. I don't know. Have you got a storyline in mind? I mean, obviously you do, but I mean, can you tell us the storyline without kind of giving the plot away?
I mean, obviously we're on Indiegogo now to raise funds, and we do go into a bit of the plot on the page and the video and in the three previous teasers, which I made sure to release. So it's the biggest, funnest thing about Convergence, and obviously it in the name, it gives that a little bit away. It's converging of these multiple fan films. You know, this is, there's a reason why I called it Star Trek Avengers working title, because it is the first biggest crossover event in fan film history. Other fan films have had a single person come over, multiple cameos that exist, you know, they film it themselves and send it in to the producer. But never has there been a crossover event when every single person is going to be in the same room at the same time, flown in to a proper studio. So, you know, getting a certain quality, that's a new thing. And that gives a certain quality and allows each actor to actually interact properly and fully. And so we're a crossover event between some legacy productions, and I'll use their original titles, obviously they're changing with the new guidelines, so everyone knows what they are. We've got Star Trek Intrepid, which is Nick Cook's production from Scotland, which is over a decade producing. Dark Armada, Robin Hirt's production from the Netherlands, again, over a decade. Starship Republic, which released a vignette 7th of yesterday, using Jim Van Dalton from that, although not exactly the same person because, you know, different timelines, different eras. Star Trek Renegades, the now abandoned subset of the Renegades verse, which I'm very, very excited to be able to give another life. And Temporal Anomaly, which was a real surprise and pleasant surprise for me, being able to bring back two cast members from the film 5 years ago, one of which I hadn't spoken to in 3.5 years, and one of which I haven't spoken to in 2 years, and they both came back and did a tremendous job. And you can see age has really seasoned their performances. So it's this big grand crossover event, and it, each person, each actor, each character is well treated, given moments, given development. Each character, actually, each storyline, each person should link to their own stories and actually deepen their own elements in other stories. Because we're a Renegades prequel, an Intrepid mid-series film, a Dark Armada prequel, a Temporal Anomaly sequel, and a Republic spin-off. So it's a wide world of wonderful there.
Are they all coming from the same timeline, or are they coming from a slightly different timeline and they end up in the same universe?
No, they're all post TNG films, except Republic. But like I said, Jim's a spiritual ancestor to himself rather than direct. Yep, it's all prime. And what's funny is that now I'm basically creating this FCU, you know, fan, not the MCU, all in one universe. So now if you can watch each film and then watch this film, then go back and watch their films, and it actually adds to it. And also technically Robin's first appearance in Prime, which is kind of fun because his series takes place like 10, 15 years after. So that's a real pleasure. But because of the Renegades link, you know, I'm not using any actors or characters from Renegades because we are about 8 years before Renegades. So that's still the future. We are utilizing their villains because I really enjoyed the Siphons as portrayed. You know, Renegades isn't the best movie, but it's a great pilot, which was not allowed to continue, unfortunately. But the Siphons as a race were really interesting to me. And I'd worked on Renegades in the behind the scenes department. Ran that department, and I got to know the team really well. And for Trek Yards, you know, we were given all the original assets from the show to show, use, and make new content of. So I was able to, you know, instantly bring in the Siphon dreadnought designed and built by Vladimir Kulfeld from Russia. You know, amazing 3D model used in one shot in the original movie, to its absolute disgrace, because it's a beautiful model. And instantly be able to give it, you know, 30 or 40 shots in the film and make them a really interesting villain. And bring in Rick Sternbach and Scott Nakada's design, the Archer, but as the Columbia. And that does make sense. That's come back in. That's the one bit of time travel in the film. That's come back in time to save everyone. And very easily use some really wonderful Renegades connections without actually having to, you know, bring in Walter Koenig or Tim Russ or anything, and yet still have a really strong connection. So that's the basic story. The Siphons are back. They effectively destroy the entire Federation 4 years before Renegades. And then the last, within the last fleet, this last ship that remains does the almost never works time jump that Spock developed. And this time it works, luckily, and he goes back in time, and now he has to actually save everyone. And I mean everyone. And it part of their tale is a morality of how far can you go? How far should you go? Where is the line? What can you justify to save literally a trillion people?
Mm.
You know, and can you even make that make sense to yourself? And within that, the story has no clear rights, wrongs, goods or bads. And I like that. You know, you should walk away saying, well, that happened. Was it right? Well, some will say yes, some will say no. And that's really interesting because the characters didn't have to deal with that, you know. And in fact, it retcons some interesting little things that give Nick Cook some pause for thought in later episodes, which was a wonderful way of connecting. And it'll actually play into Robin's performance later on as well in Dark Armada. So it really helped. It was a fun story to write. And it's simple, but it's about the characters and this kind of epic storyline, but in a very focused way. Because I've only got half an hour, so you've got to make it very focused.
Is convergence a play on words in the sense that you're converging different fan film teams, but you're also converging different crews of different ships? Or is that, am I getting that wrong?
I suppose it's more ships and fan films converging. In reality, we would not be able to represent, you know, the 200 people on a Intrepid class, 100 people on a Nova, so, and so on and so on. So to make it really a efficient film, we're only bringing over the captain of each other fan film and a secondary character who is their, you know, response character on the bridge or in other scenes, just to keep it very focused. And because some fan films have maybe 9 characters and 4 get a line each, 2 lines each. And really, if you had give that someone else, you could have given them more character development. So it's a very focused story, because it has to be, and each person does get a real part. You know, we have 4 captains, but also Lieutenant Anna Keeley, who's a great granddaughter of Rachel Keeley from Temporal Anomaly, which is amazing. And even though she's not a captain, she's the pilot of the new ship, and she gets just as much to do as everyone else. So that was really fun. It was focused, but still, you should get a sense of everyone.
Okay. How did this idea originate, Sam?
Well, late last year, as you might know from Trek Yards, we're a podcast, a webcast that looks at ships. That's what we do. And my co-host Stuart Foley designed a ship a good couple of years ago. And fans have been asking for years, when am I going to design a ship? And I sort of put that off for a bit. But end of last year, I decided, nope, this is a good time to do it. And I had an idea. I had a shape. I took it to a legendary Trek designer who I'm not naming for the moment. And they worked with me on it. And we co-designed it together, developed the design skip to January. We had some amazing sketches that I'll forever be just tickled pink by how awesome they are. And I started working with Nick Cook of Intrepid. We did, he needed some VFX for one of his in-progress vignettes, and I knew, as soon as he asked, this was a good chance for me to help a legacy project, because Intrepid is a thoroughly respected project, and I liked Nick Cook a lot. I met him previously, very briefly, but I liked him. And we got talking, we actually got on really, really well from working with him on Intrepid's visual effects. And I'd met Robin Hirt a year earlier in London. He mentioned to, you know, on Facebook, I'm in London, they want to come meet up. I said, yes, I'll put the effort in. And we met up and we also had some good chemistry. And you know, with this brand new ship, I thought, well, hey, I could just do flybys. I'm good at visual effects. That would be great. But this should really be a story. Something really good to launch it into the world. You know, my original ship, and for a lot of Trek Yards fans, that's a big deal. And it's been designed by a legend, so give it something cool. And I thought, well, hey, I got half an hour. If I want to do something that big, I could introduce a new crew, a new mission, but that would take time to set up because you'll do it properly. I want to work with Nick. Robin would be kind of cool. If I bring them in, I don't need to explain who they are. So instantly I get more time to the story and less to the backstory. So then that developed. Instantly I knew if I was doing that, I could bring in Renegades very, very quickly. I had the assets already. I knew them quite well. That was an obvious crossover ease. And then I'd worked with Jim Van Dalton for Republic. I really liked him as well. And it sort of snowballed within about a week. Everyone loved the idea, started writing. And then we filmed it within 2 months, or a portion of it, I should say, our first filming session, to prove to the fans out there that the quality we could do, and get Indiegogo content filmed, because that's always important.
Well, you can feel the excitement emanating from it straight away. I mean, I get your idea straight away, and I can feel the underswell or the upcoming swell of excitement coming from this idea. So Yeah, I'm looking forward to it already.
It's definitely something unique.
Yeah.
You know, Temporal Anomaly was the first time all the eras have come together. And it still hasn't been done since, even after half a decade, which I'm kind of amazed about. And this is the first, biggest, full crossover event. Because why just do another story? You know, do something unique. And this was pretty unique. And post-TNG, which is certainly in a lull right now for fan films.
Yeah, well, I've always said that, there's so much room to maneuver, with fan films. I'm really glad this is coming together. So it really sounds exciting. So you're going to shoot the movie in the UK, is that correct?
Yep. We already did a filming weekend, a very, very long weekend, 9 till 9, literally filming with an hour for lunch and some rehearsal time, because we knew that we had to show some stuff already and prove to people that getting them together was the sell.
Mm.
You know, look, it continues. They made a full episode first. Vic Mignogna put a lot of money to build that, and instantly people responded. You know, Sevens of Yesterday for Republic, again, shows what they can do. Putting that time and effort in was worthwhile. And obviously, the fact that we're a fan film crossover, the people involved are obviously some of the hardest core fans out there. So the bringing them together, they were instantly, yep, we'll do it. Now, originally, it was I could go fly to them and film it separately. But each of them individually said, no, let's just film it together. And I had access to a bigger studio than they've ever used. So it was an instant quality issue. I mean, a tremendous first weekend. We filmed a good 50-ish% of the project. But we couldn't fly Jim in. He's from America. That's a serious budgetary cost to fly him in. But again, the quality to have him on set is going to be proper, what you need to do. And so this crowdfunding literally is to afford travel for everyone to join us again and to cover the original budget, because we knew what we'd need going in. But we said we're going to self-fund the first half and then hope fans will support both the first half, the second half, and all the new 3D things needed for the production, and just to make it made. But we want to show some cool stuff because it is a cool project, and yeah, so we filmed about half. We've got another half to film.
So whilst we're talking, and we've got 30 days to raise,
I think it's 26 now, but at time of recording on the 7th.
But you're close on a third gathered, aren't you? Which is quite a quite a good position to be in.
Yeah, normally you have a good first couple of days, a good end couple of days, and then a very slow middle. It tends to be there. Yeah. But yeah, we've had only a few donors, but very, very supportive donors. And obviously we're going to treat those few amazingly well with updates. And I know one person in the UK wants to come to set. I mean, that's a lovely thing to be able to do. I hope we get there. You know, we need support. I was hoping we'd really tickle people's interest with something really unique and get, you know, dozens of people with low donations. But that might happen yet. I know that obviously some people are worried about CBS, and we sort of addressed that with the Temporal Anomaly question with, you know, look at their record. They've not come out of fan films. If you look at the actual record of CBS, they've only, you know, but obviously some people are worried. So I think a lot of people are waiting to see if they'll, you know, interfere. Now this thing's gone public, and obviously only 3 days in, I guess it's too early to tell. I mean, I think they would see it straight away. And obviously they know me from Trek Yards. They've seen, you know, they've got their feelers in things. They will know already.
Yeah. But you've already put a disclaimer, or not a disclaimer, I said, but you've already acknowledged them in the intro video that you've done on Indiegogo, haven't you? So, you know, if they're not aware of it, they soon will be. So, yeah. hi, CBS.
At the end of the day, it's still a... Yeah, at the end of the day, it's still a fan film, and unlike Temporal Anomaly, which was written in 2013 by a university student, this was written in 2018, literally this year, by someone, you could say a public figure in the YouTube Trek community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who I've talked to CBS directly in multiple formats, actually, with the guidelines now in mind, and it's very carefully crafted. It follows as many guidelines as is possible. And that's a lot of guidelines, even so much as having a different composer to come on to do an original soundtrack, which most fan films don't do. So we're not going to use any original music. And that is one of their soft no-nos, but they let slide for smaller films. So we're going to very much be guidelines all the way, except the ones we just can't follow. But again, every single fan film released has broken at least one, if not two, if not three.
So I saw, just going slightly off topic for the moment, you were talking about music. Sure. A while back, I saw a little documentary by a Canadian filmmaker who was doing something about the music of Star Trek, and particularly those four or five opening notes that you instantly recognizable, you know. I'm not going to hum it, but I'll try. Do, 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 do. You know, which goes into the fanfare. But he did a breakdown on it and said, well, where did that come from? And it goes all the way back to Beethoven. It goes to Mahler. It goes to different composers all the way back. So when Alexander Courage originally made the theme, he was borrowing from those who'd gone before. So there was a kind of a history of borrowing. So if you manage to get a composer who can incorporate the first three or four opening notes, I don't think you're breaking any rules, as long as the main body of the theme is slightly different. But you can at least hint using those notes. Anyway.
Well, Star Trek music has a ballpark it stays in. And so if you stay in that ballpark of instruments and, you know, you can create a feel.
Yeah.
But by being completely original.
Yeah, I think that's what most composers to do. Melodic tracks, I'm learning lots of things where some composers were almost highly resistant to using the what we call the Trek fanfare opening. Going back to it, I remember, we are completely off topic here, so I'll bring us back online in a minute. But I remember when I first heard the soundtrack for Star Trek The Motion Picture. And that theme obviously became part of Next Generation's main theme. But halfway through the film, there's a slow piece where you suddenly hear in a very quiet way the Star Trek theme we all know and recognize. And it was right in the middle of the movie. And I just thought, yes, I'm glad they included that because, you know, something different is always something shocking. Anyway, let's get away from the music for the moment, because that will all come together, I'm sure. Okay, so the storyline, is this collaborative or did this all come out of your head?
That was an interesting experience, actually, because this film, I felt a lot of need to do it right. You know, I'm representing five different productions and three of which canonically, because I'm an official, licensed Renegades prequel. I've been given a green light, so what I do actually is part of their, now like I said, now abandoned, but they're still very fond of their pilot and obviously Intrepid and Dark Armada. So I specifically went back and I watched everything that had been produced for Renegades, for Dark Armada and for Intrepid to understand the character voice of these people. And so by doing that, the story I had, which they all liked, they wanted to see it written, I was able to write it as close to them as I could, their characters. And by doing so, I was thrilled. They all loved the script. They all had very, very few notes, and most of which were on set, and they were just tweaks based on rehearsal, which was what they all, expected more than anything else. The storyline, the first two acts was mine, but the fitting into 30 minutes is obviously tricky. And Nick Cook, I chatted to on Skype a couple of times, and he helped me refine a few pieces just for that last... start, the middle, and the end, but what about that concluding middle before you get to the end? Like that last, that fourth fifth of a fifth story, part of the story, he helped me refine. So it was mostly my storyline, but certainly I had a bit of everyone. But I think they're all just on board. It's quite a simple story, but it's very characterful at the same time. So they were more concerned by what are we doing with the characters? And it's nice because Robin and Nick have known each other for over a decade, and having been done productions for over a decade, they've talked about meeting up for over a decade and never have. I'm amazed by this. And the first time was on set, and see them meet for the first time through me was pretty, pretty special. And I was able to actively invent their relationship as characters, because they had ideas over the decade. And it had often been, we're going to meet up and be, ooh, cheeky rivals and all. And I was like, nope. You've been friends for years, and I was able to instantly build this relationship. So I've managed to retcon in long-term friendship between them, and they absolutely loved playing that scene. It was a tremendous thing to watch, and they were just happy with those sorts of moments. Doing that stuff right was, I think, what they were concerned with. Because, again, my not to brag, my quality sort of speaks for itself. You've seen my production of Trek Yards, of hundreds of videos that I can produce, and they'd both seen Temporal Anomaly in my own, and you know, once I made friends with them, so they'd seen, well, okay, you can surely create something, let's just see what you can do, and they were all on board.
So there are no prima donnas in the crew then, nobody wanting to
No, actually. Robin had a couple of quick, like three words in a sentence he would change, and he added a reference line to his own production, which he says every single production. But no, apart from that, it was a truly remarkable experience to film this, the first half. The chemistry, you can never tell cast chemistry, but our cast chemistry was absolutely superb. And you can see that in the Indiegogo video, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The fun we were having. The tone, really just fun.
Yeah, no, I picked that up straight away. It's wonderful when the cast, the individual people, know their character, you know, because obviously you're getting a group of people together who on certain levels have never met each other before. They know each other by reputation. Everybody else watches everybody else's fan films. I think, we're better than that, or they're really better than us, or, you know, everybody has an opinion. But when they meet up for the first time, that's obviously going to be crucial. Are they going to get along? But it's not the personalities that have to get along. It's the characters that have to get along, isn't it? And yeah.
I think it did help that they were all coming together through my production, that they were all equals. You know, in the same way, it wasn't an Intrepid with Robin as a guest star, where the power dynamic is very much Nick over Robin. Mm. It was very much equal. And I was very careful to give everyone, not necessarily equal time, because that's just narratively not possible. I don't even know how many minutes each person has, but they feel equal in the plot, and each person has a point to be there. I've seen crossovers where they just happen to be around. It's like, okay, that's great, but if you can write them to be important, do.
Yeah, you know? So it's not just a walk-on cameo role. So somebody appears on a view screen, you know, because they have to deliver a message from Starfleet or something.
It's funny, after the initial teaser or two, I got a couple of messages from people saying, oh, I'd love to cameo. And I said, thanks, thank you, obviously, that's amazing. First of all, I haven't seen your production, so I can't speak to how you'd be incorporated. But this production takes place outside of Federation space. It's designed to be isolated in its own way, a bubble, with these people. That's part of the narrative. And so I couldn't just throw in, look, it's Captain Dudder from Dudder on the view screen.
Exactly.
For doing nothing. I mean, again, I would expect professional green screen quality from them, because that's what I'm doing for everyone else. That was one of the prerequisites that every single, you know, person involved was to be a certain quality, and then just flying them in allows for that.
Yeah, well, one thing I've noticed over the years is the quality of the fan productions is increasing. Obviously the technology is easier to access. The output is becoming more, I'll start that line again. The output is becoming closer to broadcast quality than ever before. It's very hard to tell the difference anyway. Everything's 4K HD now, isn't it?
Well, the good stuff is, yeah. For me, it's not so much a case of being a professional production, because obviously we're not. And I think this, you know, someone asked on Facebook, we do say for fans, by fans. And someone said, oh, that's all fan films. And I said, well, yes and no. Renegades, Continues, Axnar, they all were by fan professionals for fans with the high budget. We're all fans. I just happen to have specialist expertise in green screen and visual effects. I'm a professional at neither. I happen to have specialities. And Nick happens to be a very, very good, sewing person, makes costumes. It just happens to be. Same with Robin. So we have, and the two actors are actually actors. One is a student, well, one used to be a student, now does something else, but it's a hobby, and one's a lecturer, but doesn't actually act for a living. So everyone is good at what they do. But it's not professional, but they haven't been good at what they do. And then that's why I enjoy picking sort of, I think, the best actors of their cast. And obviously the budget's so small for this. So it's kind of like you're getting a high standard, not professional standard, but we happen to be pulling together more than some of our parts. And while we're not going to look as good as the topest tier of fan films, it was created in such a way that convergence that we can get a lot of bang out of the buck and a lot of, because I think green screen is underrated in a sense. If you do good shot composition, if you create interesting angles, you can make the green screen not feel flat, not feel simple, have close-ups, medium shots, wide shots that suddenly make this green screen, inverted commas, feel like a digital set, feel like a set rather than just a background. Those simple tricks that most fan films don't do give you more bang for the buck. And all I'm doing is just choosing angles when I shoot. And that's just my filmmaking knowledge coming through. So we're going to look good and hopefully, you know, top 20% of fan films, I would hope. But we have got an advantage of being made in 2018 with, you know, good kit, good cameras, and that sort of stuff was, you know, rented from the university when I filmed there. So we had a little bit of expertise in that as well. So it's just a, you know, good planning, good kit, good computers, and decent talent behind the camera leads to a pretty solid production that, you know, you're welcome to compare to 1990s Star Trek quality, but also that was 1990s Star Trek. So if it doesn't look that good in 2018, then you're doing something wrong. Mm.
Well, again, just going back to the small, little, tiny clips that you've done so far, it looks good, especially the renderings, the, you know, the VFX shots that you have, and the crew look very comfortable with each other, and you know, and they look very comfortable in their uniforms. They've gone from personality to character in a nanosecond, so it's great for them. Some people are reprising roles they haven't played for a long time. Isn't that correct?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Nick hasn't done a proper filming session, like a big filming session for an episode for years. Robin for 2 years. Chris and Nim haven't been back for 5 years. So that's amazing. And obviously you've seen Temporal Anomaly. I've sent you an early cut,
didn't
I?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not public yet, but Chris Burdett's Captain James Monroe is a very unique character in that production. Mm. And so finding out who he was beyond that was quite a challenge. And Chris loved the experience. He said it was better than Temporal Anomaly, the script, which again, hopefully it would be 5 years on. But they both love coming back. And I'm glad I picked those two. I'm glad they said yes, because they brought very unique energy to the set and really worked well together, which is funny because they never actually worked together on set. Those are the two that didn't. Mm. And yet the chemistry they had as a crew, because they are on the same ship, was really, really, really good.
I'm getting the feeling that you're also creating something new here as well, or something, at least maybe not new, but something different. And that is, you have different productions, Intrepid, Dark Armada. They're all going in different directions, but they're individual. They've never thought of collaborating with another fan group. They've never thought of collaborating with another, you know, another production. And now
another four fan groups.
Yeah, but now they are, and that in itself seems to me to be laying the roots or the basis for something that could grow bigger sometime in the future. I mean, let's get this one out of the way and then see where it goes from there. But now you have a collective.
Oh yeah. And a wonderful team. I know that I really enjoyed, like I said, working with Nick and Robin. That was a tremendous experience. And like I said at the start, just by doing this one production, they're now all a shared fan canon universe. That's just happened accidentally. And that's amazing, actually. You can now actively watch all the individual films and series and then watch this in the correct order, and it will enhance each of them. This will definitely enhance the Renegades pilot, which underserved the Siphons. There's very distinct points to that, and it helps because, you know, small plot holes are good to fix if you can, and this is a lot of fun to make those make sense. I will say the Icarus from Renegades does make a cameo appearance in the flash forward, I call it, the final battle of the Federation, and that'll be a nice chance to see some future ships and some other canon Easter eggs or fan Easter eggs, because it's interesting, because when you look at this film, it really is, I think I mentioned in Indiegogo, it's not so much a fan film using Trek canon, it's really a fan film using fan film canon. Mm. If you really break it down, the only thing we are still using is the raw art styles of the ships and whatever's. But two of the ships are original, and all the characters are original, and all the enemies are original, all the planets are original. It's actually a fan film of fan film canon. Really.
Yeah, which is amazing because, fan films, they live in their own world. They inhabit the Star Trek universe, but they also have their own thing going somewhere else, which doesn't necessarily interfere with the the major crews, as we know them, you know, the Kirks and the Archers.
And I like side stories. You know, I like things that, you know, you don't need the Enterprise, you don't need the Voyager, you don't need these things. You know, you can tell other cool stories. And that was the advantage of using these people, is that they were already pre-existent characters.
Your production to date is you have created an Indiegogo campaign, obviously primarily to raise funds so this movie can be made. But what are you missing? What are you missing? You've got your crew, you've got your idea, you've got your storyline. What are you missing? Are you a director, a music composer, a set, a location?
No, we've got a composer. Hopefully two, depending. We specifically built this film knowing what we already had and working. You know, I've been working on this since February. That's actually quite a while. We filmed in either March or early April. So we've been at this a while in the background. That was very much on purpose, to present something polished for what we could do. And very much, this is the gap of what we can't do. Help us to do that. It's very distinct. You know, we've got this quality, but the rest. And I think that really is the money for travel. There is some raw costs you can't get away from. A plane ticket from America is X. And with the fact that we need to get 7 people in the same room at the same time, which is available for a full weekend, with cameras that are available with the university, that are specifically the ones we need, the high-end ones, not 4K, but the good ones, that has to be a weekend, whichever weekend in January, February, or March we can do. And so the plane ticket cost for each person will, I can't even guess, like, properly until we get there, because we don't know the date. It has to be everyone. That is the entire point of the second shoot, is to get that interaction. And so we need the funds to be able to fund, like I said, the second half, which cannot be done without, because that's a heavy cost. I know Jim does not have the financial ability to pay for himself, and I say I don't have the spare cash to fly him in for literally a weekend. Maybe he'll stay till Monday, you know what I mean? And then reimburse the first shoot, because, you know, everyone had to have hotels. Even I had to have a hotel, as I don't live in university, or Max University town. And then we had new costumes. We had a really awful case of a costume didn't fit, and I had to get a new costume done the week before, and it was whichever costume in the world is available. The cost has to be bought to fit the guy. And so the cost was quite exuberant, but we had to have it. We couldn't waste that shoot with this actor. He was a third of the filming shoot. It's just the raw costs. And so if people want to support, they can go onto the Indiegogo, donate anything. We've got low level perks, high level perks. We try, you know, obviously perks are a weird one, because in the guidelines they say no perks, but you can't raise money with no perks, as we've seen with other productions that try GoFundMe and such. They can't gain traction. But we know that other fan films can give perks. If we look at previous fan films, and, you know, people from CBS have been like, well, you know, your perks are okay, sort of thing, in the past to other fan films. So the way we addressed that was we did things that were super internal to production. There's no merchandise, inverted commas. We're doing posters, which are easy, cheap, and simple. Signed scripts, which are, again, on location. People sign them, limited number, what we can do on set. And then cool things like a voiceover role and things, again, for the production. There's no DVDs, Blu-rays, shirts, nothing that could be considered more than that. And we've prided ourselves on designing lots of cool posters that are all different. It's not just the same thing again and again. So if you want to support, you can get a poster that is signed. That's our other gimmick. You know, if you want this, we're never going to get these people again together in this format. So be part of that experience for a little bit of money. And then if you have the money, the higher you go, the more you get for the money, because we do bundles. So if you have just $10 more, you can instantly get 3 more posters that are all signed. And yes, I'm going to work my actors to death signing, hopefully, hundreds of posters if you'll get the big, big perks. So it's kind of like simple stuff, hopefully not objectives, CBS won't object, but fun stuff that people want to support. And if we get the funds, we can shoot the second half, reimburse the first half, and every, you know, that's the budget. And then if we can get more than that, when we've set stretch goals to allow for more cool things, because that's what stretch goals should be, you know, allowing for a better production, for whatever that means. And there'll be, if we get to the 10,000, I doubt we will, but hey, if you guys, it's up to you, not me, we'll have 2 scenes added to the backers cut, because we've got these people together. We know we can film a little bit extra, because we had a super efficient time last time. We worked out how good we are together, and it's pretty good. And the backers might be getting a 35, 40 minute cut, maybe, who knows? And that's exclusive to them. So they will benefit if everyone comes together and supports.
Excellent. Okay. Who's going to sit in the center seat directing?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it is Captain James Monroe of Temporal Anomaly on the USS Horizon, because it is the outing of my ship. It has a slight advantage in that terms, but actually, when I did the visual effects, I did a rough cut of the entire film to prove it was half an hour, because that was thoroughly important. I did previs for every visual effect, and that was a great 2 weeks. Horizon is strong at the start, doesn't have as much at the end, so it kind of rebalances. It starts with one, and then it sort of ends as a combo. But no, it's Captain James Monroe. He gets some good pieces, but again, everyone has stuff to do, and some people have some really strong scenes. One of the actors who, you know, has come back from the future, I mean, can you even imagine his perspective, having over the last 2 years of his time watched a single ship come across the entire, what you thought was a Federation so big it could never fail, destroying ship after ship after ship, station, planet, and he's survived. Maybe it's through luck. Maybe is it through skill? He's not in the best ship. He's not the best captain, but maybe through luck, through happenstance, he survived. And now he's got this chance, one single chance. If he dies, this will all happen again, and it won't, you know. So the scenes with Jim Van Dalton, I like Jim a lot. I like his acting style, and I want to push him. I always find pushing people is a good thing to do. I think I did on set. I'm really excited to see how he plays that, because it's some passionate stuff that, again, there is no right or wrong, because I think you can understand his point of view. You know, there's no crazy villains, crazy goodies. Even the Siphons you can understand. And that's one thing I liked about their backstory in Renegades. They aren't attacking for the sake of it. You know, there's something there, and I've helped to expand on that just a little bit.
Excellent. Sam, I want to thank you for coming on Continuing Mission to talk about Convergence. There's a lot of information we've just we've chatted about a lot of ideas. Sorry, I'm going to have to do that again because I was squidging in my chair, and that's probably getting picked up by the microphone. So, Sam, thanks for coming on Continuing Mission. Brilliant idea.
Oh, you're welcome.
Brilliant idea. I love the whole idea of crews coming together from different fan productions. I can't think of another case where this might have happened, or it might have happened with, you know, two productions, but certainly not four. And I think you're laying the basis of something that will get even bigger in the future, and it's exciting.
Ironically, Nick Cook from Intrepid and Hidden Frontier back in the day did do one of the first two film crossovers, so he sort of paved the way back in the day, but this is taking it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, this is certainly taking it to a whole new level. So we're coming to a close here, and so before we go, where can people find you on social media?
Well, you can just search Convergence, a Star Trek fan production, on Facebook, or Power 543 Fan Films, or just Convergence Star Trek on YouTube to find the Indiegogo video and the Indiegogo itself. Again, Indiegogo, search Convergence or Star Trek Fan Film. It's a fun page. Really, go watch the video. It's definitely worth the 7 minutes, because there's a lot to go on there. And there's also four other teasers that give away little bits and show off characters and visual effects and prove that we can do it, because that's very important. And join the conversation on Facebook, as I said, and obviously join Trek Yards, because we're going to do videos on Convergence as well, about the new ship and the new crews and stuff. So lots of fun.
We were talking about cameos. Did you you're going to have Stuart Foley come along?
This is Stuart's very first fan film appearance.
So
But he's not playing Captain Foley. He's not playing a Starfleet captain, because that would be too easy.
Is that right? Yeah. I hear a rumor he's rehearsing his lines every night.
This is a mantra now. Yeah. You'll have fun. Trek Yards fans will have fun with that. I knew I wanted to include him, and it's a fun little cameo. I also have a cameo. I have two lines.
Oh, excellent.
Because I already own the uniform. That's it. That's the reason. Extra pressure value.
Always a good reason. Yeah, it's my ball. Nobody plays unless I get a game to. Yeah. Okay.
I think all my lines is yes, sir. So it's not hired acting, but it's something.
All righty. Okay. Sam, thanks again for coming on Continuing Mission. I'm sure we'll talk again in the future. I'm looking forward so much to seeing what happens next. It has a great ring of excitement about it. And when people start putting their hands in their pockets and the cash register starts ringing up the pound signs. We'll know we're on the way. Okay.
Here's hoping
indeed. So thank you again for coming to talk with me. And
thank you.
We'll end it there. Okay. Cheers, Sam.
Bye.
Well, it's been a real treat to talk with Sam today. I hope you've been inspired to go and seek out Sam's Indiegogo page, explore the contribution options, and go where, well, you know what to do. Meanwhile, here in the Alpha Quadrant, Trek FM has been putting out a range of other shows you might like, so take a listen to these clips.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
However, one thing
everyone's gonna sing the song. Everyone join me.
No, I will not join you. I'm sorry. Okay, however,
are you?
Meta Treks.
Speaking of character, I always found it interesting how many ways Q manifests himself, the characters that he takes on. We see him as a Starfleet commander, a Bajoran waiter. We see him as an alien captain. This
Q's just a cosplayer.
This is a man of many faces.
Who knew Q was such a theater geek?
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
I felt like I was in a Vegas casino and the bling, bling, yeah, bling, like it was the jackpot. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? How is she affecting the replicators and that's throwing food out? I've never seen a replicator throw food out.
Melodic Treks.
Well, it was definitely about a lower budget. There was no question that we could not afford Jerry Goldsmith. And later, by the time we got to do Star Trek VI, we couldn't afford Jamie Horner.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the name Continuing Mission. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. I'm Tony Robinson. You can find me on Twitter at Shamrock165 and I do post on the Babel Conference from time to time. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trackofm. And before we leave you today, we'd like to send a big thanks to C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher, and Ken Tripp, our executive producer, who work very hard to make these shows a reality. Thank you for tuning in to Continuing Mission. I'm Tony Robinson. Live long and prosper.